The Natural Nurse with Ellen Kamai and Dr. Z, Mondays at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
The Natural Nurse, and as always, we're wishing you the best right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We bring you The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z every Monday at 1 p.m. right here on Progressive Radio Network. One of the great things about Progressive Radio Network, Ari Null's network, is that you can join us anytime, day or night, 24 hours a day. Not only for The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, but any of the wonderful shows that are presented here at Progressive Radio Network. Just go to the website, click on Archives, and look for your favorite show. To find this show, you have to go to T, because it starts with T for The Natural Nurse. When you click on there, you'll see lots of the other shows that we present, not only us, but the many excellent hosts right here on Progressive Radio Network. So I always feel that that is a wonderful addition to the services provided by Progressive Radio Network. Today we have as our guest Dr. Stacy Funt. Dr. Funt is an allopathically trained physician, and she went to New York University and Mount Sinai Medical Centers, and she works as a radiologist at Good Samaritan Medical Center on Long Island, New York. In 2008, she co-founded the hospital's Green Care Committee, and in 2010, she co-founded the Coalition for Environmental Health. She has lectured at Grand Rounds to attending physicians and residents on the effects of environmental toxins on the developing fetus and child, and how to reduce exposure in the home. Dr. Funt has also given numerous workshops within the hospital and surrounding community at parents groups, libraries, and PTAs on greening your life one step at a time. And she is the co-leader for the brand new Western Suffolk chapter of the Holistic Moms Network. So we are very happy to have a local guest right here from our area, Dr. Stacy Funt, as our guest here today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Hi, Stacy.
Hi, Ellen. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for joining us today. And I'll just ask you on air, but we'll talk about it off air another time. I'd love to schedule you to do Grand Rounds, because I'm a professor at Stony Brook Medical School, and they often ask us to bring in guest speakers for Grand Rounds. So you and I will talk about that at another time.
Sure.
But today I'd like our listening audience to get a little sense about you, because I want to share with them that you sent me a different bio, and you said, you know what, maybe I don't want to focus so much on my professional life, which is exquisite, but I really want to promote the fact that first and foremost in my life, I'm a mom. So let's talk about that part of yourself. How did your children sort of lead you into this entire realm of holistic medicine?
Oh, they were really my whole segue into it. I mean, my whole process really started in 2008 when I started the Green Care Committee. And it was completely from an environmental perspective, really to help us become more sustainable within the hospital and my feelings about that. And as I started to do that work, we had a subcommittee on toxic substances. And I started to learn about some of the products that we were using in our plastics and in our cleaning supplies, the phthalates, the DEHP. I'd never heard of any of this stuff before, and it was never in any of my training. And I thought, well, if this could be harmful to people in the hospital, you know, I have young children in my home, and their bodies are developing, and, you know, let me take a look and see what I have in my own house and what's going on there. And that's what really led me to start to do all of this research and to start to learn about some of the effects of the environmental toxins upon our bodies. And, you know, when I did start to look into this, I was completely overwhelmed. Like, I had no idea that there was so much information and how uneducated I was and many of my colleagues about what was going on.
Well, one thing I have to say is really, I mean, perhaps you have made progress in your hospital, but recently I was visiting actually a newborn, and that was a premature baby, in fact, and they seem still to be using all kinds of plastics.
You know, it is a challenge. There's a wonderful nonprofit organization, and it's there's Healthcare Without Harm, and they're working with all this. We did a lot of work to promote this within our hospital, and it was only about a year ago that they switched the PVC tubing in our hospital. It happens to be much more common on the West Coast than the East Coast. We tend to lag behind a little bit. But more and more is coming out with the radiation exposure, the chemicals we're using. And it can be an uphill battle, especially now in the time of an economic crisis in healthcare, because some of these products, at least initially, require outlaying more money. You know, switch your IV tubings, it's not just about the tubing, it's about the pumps. It's a lot of different products tied into one vendor. But I think it's going to become mandated as time goes on. You know, a lot of research is coming out, and I think that there are going to be a lot of changes within the next 5 years. They're going to actually mandate changes in hospitals that have not already done them.
Oh, could you tell me the name of that organization again that's also working on this? Healthy Hospitals, did you say?
There's Healthcare Without Harm, and then there was H2E. You know, I can send you all that information after, but Healthcare Without Harm is one of the...
That's an important one. I never heard of that. You know, Healthcare Without Harm, wasn't that, as a physician, what your oath was about in the first place?
Uh-huh. And, you know, Practice Green Health is the other really big one. That's the one that we work with. And, yes, that is our oath. And, you know, Ellen, everyone, a lot of things that we've done, we later find out turn out to be harmful. But, you know, we can only do the best that we have at the time. And, you know, people needed IV fluids and IV antibiotics and all these things, and that's great. And IV tubing came out to be a great way to deliver that with us not knowing what ended up being in those products. So, you know, it's not this great evil. It's that as more research comes out, we learn that, oh, what we're doing right now, we have to do it a little bit differently because some of the products we're using are harmful. But, you know, there's something that our culture really does not embrace, and that's something called the precautionary principle. And the way that we really work is we use something until we're absolutely certain, beyond a shadow of a doubt, with double-blinded studies and peer-reviewed journals, that something is bad for us, as opposed to the precautionary principle, which is the idea that if we think something realistically has the potential to be harmful, then we don't use it until we have those same studies. And unfortunately, at this point, that's not really the way our culture exists. But, you know, we are switching around, and again, more and more is coming out that these products are going to be changed.
That's great, and that's some of the important work that you're doing and the kind of position that you're in to actually help get this information where it needs to get, which is, let's say, hospital purchasing committees who actually
right.
might be able to make the choice to purchase something less toxic in terms of supplies.
Right. Practice Green Health really is a wonderful resource, and if there are any hospitals interested in doing this kind of work, they really can provide you with a lot of information, help you set up your committees. They offer, you know, we received awards from them. They give recognition. Actually, Stony Brook, I think, has received a lot of awards, too.
Well, that's hopeful information.
Yeah.
Love hearing that.
Yeah.
Now, what did you find in your home, which you actually went ahead in that, of course, as a mother and as a homemaker, which you are in addition to a physician, you're able to make those changes very quickly through just self-choice.
Yeah, well, you know, I give workshops, like you mentioned, and they're called Greening Your Life One Step at a Time. And I can go through that with you, where we actually go through the house, like room by room and section by section of what changes to make. But for me, it really started with the plastics. And, you know, if you look at the bottom of plastic, there's a little triangle with a number in it. And those numbers mean something. There's 1 through 7. And threes, sixes, and sevens are the ones that are undesirable. I always remember March 1967. It just helps me remember it. And that was one of the first things I learned. And I went into my closet and looked at some of my really old Tupperware I had forever, and I saw a bunch of the sixes and sevens. So I replaced those, and I got a lot of glass products, and that was the first step. And again, this becomes so overwhelming. So for me, and it's an ongoing process, it's really like one thing at a time. You know, otherwise it's too much. And then the next thing we looked at was our cleaning supplies, you know, and we did it like that. And I ended up jumping into food a little unexpectedly. We had an issue with my son, and that kind of bypassed some other things and led us in a different direction. But it was really just making choices one at a time. And after I did one thing, I thought, oh, you know, that felt good. You know, I feel like I'm taking good care of my family, and I feel like I'm becoming more aware. And you know, as you know, once you become aware of something, fortunately or unfortunately, you can't ignore it anymore. You know, it's there. So, you know, I couldn't put a plastic container in the microwave anymore without feeling, my gosh, you know, what could I potentially be doing?
Well, that's a great specific one right there. What does happen if you use a plastic container in the microwave, and does it matter which number plastic container you might use?
Well, you know, I don't really know the research on the microwave, but, you know, the thing with plastics, and again, I go through this in the workshops that I give in the order, but the thing with plastics, most of it is PVC and the hard plastics and the soft plastics. They have chemicals in them, like the phthalates and the bisphenol A. And like phthalates are a plasticizer. If you have a hard plastic, the phthalate is what makes it a little bit bendable. It makes it very usable. We love the softer plastics. But the problem is these compounds are not chemically bound to the plastic. So the chemicals can actually leach right out. So if they're in contact with fluid, and it doesn't just have to be in the microwave, even just in a water bottle. This is the big thing with water bottles. You know, and again, it depends on the number. But the chemicals can leach right out, right into the fluid that they're in contact with, and then we ingest them. Same as with the makeup. You know, the phthalates are fragrance carriers, and that can leach right out and right into our skin and into our systems.
Isn't that amazing that they're so prolific? I mean, I'm always amazed in the vitamin supplements that often manufacturers actually even put those in plastic. There are some manufacturers like Nature's Answer that always chooses glass. But even there, you're spending a lot of money on something that you think is going to promote wellness, and you really have to think about that.
It's amazing how pervasive this is. It really is. You know, we went on a different path with my son, and we don't give him any artificial ingredients. And finding things without artificial coloring or sweeteners or preservatives, it really was a big task locating where these products are. And they don't have to be in so many of our products, but they are.
Now, why are they so prolific throughout the environment, do you think?
Well, I mean, I'm sure a part of it is the cost factor. You know, it's a lot cheaper to make some products than others, you know. So I would think number one is the cost factor. And also, you know, habits are hard to die. You know, we're used to a certain thing. You know, in the 50s, the plastics came out, right? Wasn't it, what was that famous movie, you know, where The Graduate, where Dustin Hoffman's talking to the father, and he says, plastics, you know, that's the answer, plastics. And we thought they were revolutionary, and they were great in so many ways, and everybody started using them. And it became mainstream. Now we're finding some issues with some of the plastics. But it takes a long time, I think, for a culture to change. You know, again, it's the whole idea of show me the proof. You know, show me the absolute proof before I'm ready to change my habits. And now the absolute proof is coming out bit by bit.
Now, I wonder who should actually be responsible for proving the safety of these things before they're dumped onto the marketplace, because obviously the FDA doesn't do it. And, you know, the product manufacturer does not do it either.
Well, a lot is happening in that area. You know, it's in the 1970s. It's not necessarily the FDA's fault. You know, in the 1970s, in the Bush administration, legislation was passed that really took the power away from the FDA and really put the onus on them to prove that chemicals are bad, rather than on the companies themselves. And in 2010, the Safe Chemicals Act was introduced. And that's in legislation right now, where they're trying to get the burden back on the companies, you know, rather than on the FDA. And just last month, a really big thing happened called they put forth the Safe Chemicals Act, which Safe Cosmetics Act, which is all about our cosmetics, which is a huge other story. And that's another bill that's pending right now that's gaining a lot of support, that they label all the ingredients in our cosmetics and that they have much more stringent testing and limitations for all this. You know, the Europeans are way ahead of us. You know, they have much, much stricter regulations than we do. But this is all starting to come out now. You know, in 2010, the president, there's the I think it's every 2 years, the president's cancer panel puts out a big report. And the whole focus of their report in May of 2010 was on environmental toxins and the role they play in cancer. And this actually had a big reaction from a lot of different groups, some positive and some negative. But it's reports like these that, you know, are changing the whole way that we're looking at everything and the legislation that's come up. And there are many senators that are really on board with this, that are really pushing stringent laws. And as we're seeing all these changes in, you know, disease trends, particularly in our children, you know, you're hearing about this stuff all the time now with neurological disorders and autism and obesity and all these different things. And the public is becoming very, very involved. And when that starts to happen, that's, I think, when you see the shift.
And probably the most effective way for consumers to initiate these changes is to vote with their dollars.
Absolutely.
Because
absolutely.
Now you, as a, just even as an individual, as a mother, besides the fact that you're on all these committees in a hospital and you're able to help initiate change there, you went to the store, and I think I remember you saying, even when you went to purchase some of these newer items, that, boy, it is kind of costly.
It's very costly, some of them. It is. But, you know, there are ways around that. And even in the workshop, I do put out a whole list of things you could do for free to start making changes, you know. And there are cheaper ways to get things, but some things, it is just going to cost more money, you know. And then we try to save things
in the short. Because in the long term, if these things truly are as toxic as it looks like they are and possibly linked to so many health issues, the amount of money that you'll save in health care overall is huge.
Absolutely. You know, there's a statistic, Ellen, that blew me away. You know, in 2009, a report came out. Over one-third of children between ages 10 and 19 are on chronic medication. And that's not antibiotics, that's chronic medication, the most common ones for asthma, diabetes, and psychiatric conditions. You know, but the amount of resources we use for health care for some of these diseases that studies are now suggesting a potential link from environmental toxins with some of these diseases, you know, can end up being huge. And I think a great example of a testament of how powerful it can be when you vote with your money, you know, and with your fork in particular. You know, another area I talk a lot about is artificial ingredients and the role that they have, the effect on children's behavior. And there was a big study that came out in The Lancet in the mid-2000s. And The Lancet is like England's equivalent of our Journal of American Medical Association. And this study showed, it was an interesting study, and they took a group of 3-year-olds, 8-year-olds, and 9-year-olds, and they put them all on a diet free of artificial ingredients. And I'm veering off topic. I'll get back to the topic.
Oh, that's fine. No, that's very good information.
So they put them all on a diet free of artificial ingredients, and it was a double-blinded study. Nobody knew who was receiving what. What they do is they then gave them a drink, a punch. And one group had totally natural with no artificial ingredients. The other had artificial ingredients. The amount, not even the amount a typical kid would get on the standard diet today of the items we have in the mainstream supermarket. And there was a double-blinded study, and they had the parents rate the behavior and the teachers rate the behavior. And across the board in all groups, the kids who were given the artificial ingredients had increased activity, had hyperactive behavior. And not just the kids diagnosed with ADHD, this was across the board. Well, in England, there was such a reaction to this study. There was such a grassroots movement that it gained such momentum, became huge, that they changed the food that was available in their supermarkets. You know, for us, if you want the natural stuff, you go to the very last aisle, you know, back by the eggs or something, you know. But if you go to England now, you go into any market, and you'll see mainstream products without artificial ingredients. And there are even companies in American companies that give us products that have, you know, red dye in it, the exact same product they send over to England is colored with beet juice or something like that. You know, and it's all because of their reaction and the political power it ends up happening. Where in this country, originally that study was embraced and then it was criticized and other studies came out which didn't show the same results, which themselves had their own flaws with their studies, but it didn't carry the same reaction here. So it really goes to show the power of the masses.
That's so true. And how you can, just through changing your own life, actually change society because you're a part of it.
Right.
And by talking to your friends and then, like you said, bringing it to your job. And it just kind of spreads. And it is spreading. It's just aggravating, I guess, when people realize that perhaps they're suffering from an illness that could have been avoided if somebody else besides themselves was the watchdog.
Right.
So we're just going to take a little break right here, Dr. Fun, and when we come back, we're going to continue with more specific information, like some of the main toxins that you're talking about, why children are most at risk, and so much interesting information that you have, like inexpensive ways to integrate these changes into your life.
Okay.
We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
You're listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Political Analysis, a 21st century news and public affairs program featuring voices and views you won't hear in the corporate-sponsored media. I'm Sandy Leon Best, editor and publisher of Solar Times and host of Political Analysis, aired every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 3 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Progressive Radio Network. Political Analysis features independent perspectives from some of the world's most progressive writers, activists, and visionaries. To listen to past shows, visit Political Analysis Archives at progressiveradionetwork.com/political-analysis. Political Analysis, a groundbreaking look at the world.
Do you want to listen to your favorite PRN show in your car or when you're out for a jog? You can download any show on the archives at any time. Visit the archives at progressiveradionetwork.com/archives. We can also be found in the iTunes store under Progressive Radio Network. All our archives are free, so go ahead and check them out. Thanks for listening to the Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned to stay informed.
With Sierra Club Radio. Tune in Fridays at 11 a.m. Eastern on the ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com to hear interviews with green authors, activists, politicians, celebrities, and more.
Mike Fader here. Every Thursday following Gary Noll from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time, I will expound and expand on stories, both personal and public, attempting to make the sometimes ephemeral but always essential connections between our internal landscapes and our external lives. So please join me, Mike Fader, Thursdays from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time for The Turning Point, here on the Progressive Radio Network.
This is PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
welcome back once again right here on Progressive Radio Network. You can always comment about any of our shows or give us your suggestions about what you'd like to hear about in terms of natural health and natural medicine by just going to naturalnurse.com on the web or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And we have been getting a lot of your comments on Facebook, The Natural Nurse. So we do answer you, and we do love to hear from you. So either of those places would be great. And you can also join us in person. We're doing many herb walks over the summer months where we go outside, actually pick, identify, and make medicine out of wild medicinal plants that grow all over in our region, as well as giving workshops and lectures on many aspects of holistic medicine. And in fact, I will also be a speaker at the new Western Suffolk County chapter of the Holistic Moms Network, who our guest, Dr. Stacy Funt, is one of the co-leaders of, and we're going to talk about that. We'd like to bring back on board our guest for today, Dr. Funt, who is the mother of 7-year-old twins. That's not enough of a challenge. She is also a radiologist at Good Samaritan Medical Center and is the co-founder of the hospital's Green Care Committee and Coalition for Environmental Health. And Dr. Funt leads the task force to reduce radiation exposure, which is very appropriate since she is a radiologist. And she also has given numerous workshops and lectures to physicians and the general community and is available to speak to your group as well in terms of reducing environmental toxins in the home. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Funt.
Thank you.
Now, that's an interesting question. Let's talk about the Holistic Moms Network. What led you to put together another job for yourself?
Well, as I said, I was getting involved with the environmental toxins, and my son was 4 years old at the time when we got a phone call from the school that they thought he had ADHD. And so we had him evaluated, and we met with the teachers, and we met with Suffolk County, and we did everything they said. And he was right on the border of true diagnosis. And they talked about the benefits of medication and in the future, and they suggested that we go to CHAD, and we started behavioral modification, and, you know, we did all these things. And I was very mainstream when it came to all of this. And then my mother-in-law called me, and she said, you know, I know this woman upstate I've gone to, you know, why don't you go see her? And to me, she sounded very woo-woo. You know, this was very outside the box for me. But, you know, when it comes to your own child, as long as I didn't think it was harmful, you know, I was willing to talk to anybody and do anything. And I went to see her, and she did these very unorthodox things that have no research to support them and said, he's sensitive to gluten, dairy, and I think you should take him off that. And, Ellen, I don't know if you remember, but I contacted you at that time also. I sent you an email. I didn't really know you as well, but I was searching for anything. And I said, is there anything I can give him? And you said, don't give him anything, but stop giving him the artificial ingredients, the colorings, the sweeteners, and the preservatives. And so this is what we did. It took a few weeks for me to research everything. I lived in the city 17 years. I hadn't cooked a day in my life. I had no idea what gluten was, you know, and we decided to try this. I figured we certainly had nothing to lose, you know, besides some time and some money. So, you know, why not try it? And we did. And it ended up being incredibly effective for him. I mean, we saw dramatic results, and it was really unbelievable for us. But the people around me, first of all, a lot of them didn't believe me. It was so interesting. Like, they didn't know my son like we did, so they didn't know some of his extreme behaviors as we did. And they just, a lot of people just weren't open to the idea that food can affect how you behave. You know, I got resistance from the people from the school and from the pediatricians at first in terms of the route that we were going to take. And, you know, I also felt like I was going crazy. I was spending so much time researching. I didn't know anything about this, and I really needed some support. I felt very much alone on this whole thing that, for me, was very outside of the box of what I was used to doing. And that's when I found the Holistic Moms Network. And there are two chapters in Nassau County. There was none at Suffolk at the time. So I started going. This was a few years ago. And this is such an incredible organization. This was started in 2002 by about 12 women in New Jersey who just wanted to explore green living and alternative health care and just make informed decisions and get some support for it. So I went really just because I needed to talk to somebody who didn't look at me like I was crazy because I didn't let my kid have the traditional snacks everybody was having at school. And it was really amazing what I found there. I did find the support I was looking for. You know, I found women who were doing exactly what I was doing. I found people who gave me ideas for recipes and just, you know, really the kinds of education that I was looking for. And the organization is really based on three tenets, and that's education, support, and community. And it's very grassroots. You know, every chapter, the national organization provides wonderful resources and training for the leaders. And then every group really defines themselves and decides what they want to do as a chapter. And we started in June. We had our kickoff. And in July was our first speaker, and we had a great turnout. We had Mariel Samus from the Northport Wellness Center speaking on supporting children's health with nutrition. And in August, we have a wonderful speaker, Rona Yari from, I don't know if you know, Inner Spirit Yoga Center in East Northport. And she's going to be speaking on creating balance in the home from a yogic perspective. And we're very fortunate, Ellen, we have you in October. I think you said you're going to be speaking on ear infections, right? I think you said something like that. And anyway, so the whole idea is really to provide education. Every third month we have an informal gathering where we can get to know each other better. And it's a very wide group of people where all different beliefs and all different philosophies are very welcomed without judgment. You know, there are some women who have very definite beliefs about vaccinations and homeschooling. There are other women and men and grandparents and all different sorts of people who are very mainstream and just want to find out about how to feed their children a little bit healthier. You know, it's a very wide variety of people, but it's a really wonderful way that people can come together and share information. Because one of the things I was looking for, I didn't want to have to keep recreating the wheel. You know, the idea of going gluten-free was so huge to me. You know, I wanted somebody else to help me find all these products I had to replace in my son. And, you know, it's really a fabulous organization that really gave me everything I was looking for. So one of my friends, Vicki Muller, who was in another chapter with me, together we started the Western Suffolk chapter. And if anybody in the area is interested, we do meet the first Thursday of every month at the Elwood Public Library at 7 p.m. Any healthcare professional or any kind of practitioner is welcome. They do have a strict no solicitation policy. It's really for educational purposes and for us to just learn from each other. You know, everybody wants something different from their family. You know, everybody knows what's good for their own family, and it's a great place for us to meet each other and share ideas.
Well, we have to thank you for the time and energy you put into making this happen. So that's great. You certainly wear a lot of hats. Now, I know you do a specific presentation, which I really enjoyed looking at with you, that has very detailed information about how people can start to reduce environmental toxins in their home.
Yes, yes.
So why don't we talk about some of those things?
Sure. And, you know, before I do, I just want to mention, you know, when we talk about what toxins there are, you know, we talk about carcinogens, which are cancer-causing agents, and we talk about neurotoxins, which affect the nervous system. But the newest thing that's in the news a lot, and I just want to mention them because people may see them so often, are what's called endocrine disruptors. And these are compounds in our environment that when they get into our bodies actually think they're one of our hormones, part of our endocrine system, and it will react accordingly. So like bisphenol A, you know, if you go to the baby store, you'll see a lot of the BPA-free baby bottles now. It's actually a law in Suffolk County. It's not a law everywhere. You know, that's an estrogen mimicker, and that can get inside of our body. And the other one that a lot of people talk about, we mentioned before, was the PVC. And again, that's what they put in the hard plastics to make it soft. It's also in the fragrance carriers. And another name for the phthalates, one of them is the DEHP. So I mention that because as people are doing their own research and starting to learn, these are main things that they're really going to see. And they're talking about this on 60 Minutes, and they have articles all the time in the New York Times in this. But when it does go to changing things in your home, again, what I recommend is just pick one thing. Because, you know, all this information can be very scary, and all of a sudden you think, oh my gosh, I have to protect my kids from things, you know, and it is minute exposures over time. So everything doesn't have to be done by tomorrow. But just choosing one thing and starting in one small area and having a very concrete thing you want to do is really
And also very interesting what you said. I mean, beating yourself over what you did up till now is just a total waste of energy.
Oh, I mean, I didn't know any of this until my kids were four. And what I did the first 4 years, you know, I mean, it is a total waste of energy. And, you know, they do talk, Ellen, there's a term total toxic load. So even changing one thing at this point, you know, even changing cleaning supplies, and the most important one they would say is your dish detergent, you know, even changing that can have an effect of just starting to decrease the total toxic load. And again, a lot of this research is on larger amounts or, you know, that have been exposed to throughout time. And I think
let's talk about that. That's a great one to talk about. You're talking about what people wash their dishes with. Does that include things at the sink and also dishwashers?
Yeah, you know, I don't know necessarily about dishwashers. I just know about cleaning supplies. And, you know, one area in general is just overall cleaning supplies. You know, when you get home and that house smells so clean and it feels so good, that smell really isn't so good. You know, that's what we've come to learn. And if you are going to change one thing, the reason they say cleaning the dish detergent is, first of all, it's on your dishes that you're eating from every day. You use it almost every day, and it gives off fumes into your kitchen. You know, and that's one of the reasons that they say start with that, you know. But you want to look for labels that are non-toxic, bio-based, chlorine-free, et cetera, et cetera. I am not a label reader when it comes to cleaning supplies. I feel like I had to get a master's just to learn some of the food ingredients, let alone go on to cleaning supplies. So I tend to use what companies that I have trust in, some of the larger companies that I know, or some of my friends who are more involved with this, I trust their opinion. And a lot of people, Ellen, are going back to their old homemade cleaning supplies. I mean, we mop our floors with vinegar and water. I never knew you could do that. It smells for 30 seconds and then it's gone, you know. And a friend of mine was joking that we're going back to the way our grandmothers were, with cast iron pans and, you know, using vinegar and growing our own food in our backyards, you know.
Well, you know, vinegar is an excellent house cleaner, and another one that I use, it's almost the only two things I ever use, really, is that and baking soda.
Right, right.
I mean,
yes.
If you put baking soda, I'm going to give a little recipe I use all the time. If you use your oven and it gets anything on it that's burnt, you can actually put baking soda in a dish and add just enough water to make it a paste and then brush it on with a brush on any kind of burnt on anything. And this works on my glass baking pans, which is also what I use in the oven. I never use aluminum or anything. I just use glass. And if you paint this stuff on there and just let it harden, the next day it actually wipes off. I mean, it works better than any of the harsh chemicals and is completely non-toxic and cheap.
Wow. Right. Well, that's one of the areas that people can save money, you know, making some of their own cleaning supplies. And it's not that you have to pour five different ingredients in a bottle and shake it up each time. You know, some of these are really easy to make.
And that one definitely is.
Yeah.
Great.
You know, when people do look for cleaning supplies, though, it is important to watch out for. It's a term called greenwashing. There is no regulation at this point on these products, and anybody can say they're all natural and have pretty green writing on a tan, you know, label. So that's why I say I tend to use some of the companies I have more faith in, because unless you really know what the ingredients are, there is no regulation at this point.
Yes, that's true on foods, too. You know, some of the mainstream companies are now saying all natural, which doesn't
right.
mean anything. It doesn't
right.
mean it's
right.
free of hormones. It really doesn't mean anything. It's
well,
just,
natural
let's say
foods.
They say natural chicken, it just means it's chicken.
Exactly. You know, in my search for food without artificial ingredients, natural flavoring doesn't mean it's not artificial. I didn't know that.
Well, many people don't, and I'd like you to repeat that, Dr. Funt, because actually the natural flavor manufacturers are allowed to use many different compounds and lump it without mentioning what it is under that natural flavor monogram.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, well, if you want me to, I mean, what I said in that, so with so many food ingredients, I didn't know the different names for things and legally what you're allowed to say and what that really means or what I'm not sure that means. You know, that's been an educational process in and of itself, and we tend to do a lot more home cooking now, I have to say. You know, I've gotten a lot better than I was 3 years ago, but, you know, a lot of products, I'm just not exactly sure what's in them.
See, that's such a good point, because as a working mom, you certainly can relate to the fact that a lot of people are working, a lot of mothers are working, and fathers, and there's not much time for food preparation. So what I do is cook really once or twice a week, and then I have my own organic food that I take with me everywhere I go.
Right.
And that's one way around it, and it really does save a lot of money as well.
Right. Yeah. You know, we try our best. You know, we always say Sundays is going to be our big cooking day, but, you know, things get in the way and it does get hectic. But again, we try our best. You know, there's a wonderful organization. It's Healthy Child, Healthy World, and they do a lot of this work. They do a lot of these presentations. And they have this saying, no one can do everything, but everyone can do something. And I always think about that, you know, and I always say, okay, I'm not doing this perfectly, or maybe I can't get that perfectly, but I'm doing as much as I can. And each time, you know, I try to do something else, and at least I'm aware. And there's so many things, Ellen, that we don't even have to do differently. It just takes consciousness, like different food items. It just means choosing one brand over another. Or, you know, when it comes to produce, right? Like, organic food is fabulous. It's wonderful. But not everybody can afford organic food, certainly, you know, or choose to spend all their money on organic food. And the Environmental Working Group, I'm sure you know this organization. They're such a wonderful organization. It's a nonprofit, independent company. And one thing that they put out that's been so helpful is something called the Dirty Dozen. And they independently test all the produce each year for the level of pesticides in them. And they put out a list of what are the 12 items in produce that are the highest levels in pesticides. But they also put out a list of the clean 15, what ones are the lowest. So, you know, if you don't want to change the cost of your grocery bill, which especially in this economy is very understandable, then you may want to pick more of the watermelon and the pineapple than the strawberries and the apples, you know, depending upon what's on that list. So again, you know, to me, the purpose of some of this is just to start to become educated so we can just make these conscious choices that, without even affecting our lives that much, can really have a difference.
Yes, I love Environmental Working Group, and that's EWG.org there. They have great resources and printouts for everyone to use.
They do. You know, another resource of theirs that I love is their cosmetic database. And when I talk about the bathroom, I talk about that a lot, you know, the personal products that we're using. You know, if we thought the plastics and the cleaning supplies weren't regulated, the cosmetics are really not regulated. I think they've disallowed maybe 8 products over the last 15 years. And the EWG.org has a whole database where you can just type in the product that you use, whatever it is. They have thousands of products. And it will give you a toxicity rating between 1 and 10, 10 being the worst, 1 being the best. And you can just look up how toxic is your product considered. So if you have 2 different products that you like, plug them in. One may be a lower toxicity rating than the other. And again, it may not be changing your life significantly, just becoming aware and making those choices.
Now, why are children most at risk? As you shared with us earlier, your role as a mom is so important to you and led you in this direction. But why should people be even more concerned about their kids?
Well, they're smaller, and because of that, proportionately, they breathe twice as much air, they eat 3 to 4 times as much food, they're drinking much more water. Kids are down in the grass rolling around, their faces in the carpet, they're putting things in their mouths, and their bodies are still developing. You know, a child, the blood-brain barrier in a child isn't fully developed until they're 6 months of age, and a child's brain is not fully developed until they're age 20. And a really interesting line of research that's come out the last year the last few years have been when people start to ask, okay, at what point is a child first exposed? You know, they're more susceptible, but when do they start to become exposed? And this is a lot of information I had no idea about. And there was a study in 2009 by a group called the Washington Toxics Coalition, and they looked at blood and urine of second trimester pregnant women. And they found 100% of them had bisphenol A, 100% had mercury, and most had several phthalates and Teflon chemicals. So another group, the Endocrine Society, then said, okay, that was in the mother's blood and urine. Let's look at the amniotic fluid. So they looked at the amniotic fluid in second trimester women, pregnant women. This was in the year 2000. And at that time, a third of all samples tested positive for at least one environmental contaminant. And they said at that time the consequences of which remain unknown. Then the bigger study came out. Well, not number-wise. It was still a small sample group. But in 2009, the Environmental Working Group then looked at random sample cord blood. This is blood that came from the umbilical cord second that baby was born. And they found 232 toxic chemicals, including bisphenol A, flame retardant, synthetic fragrances and cosmetics, and Teflon chemicals. So most of these are products that we're using in our own homes. Now, all these studies, Ellen, were on small sample sizes. They all use different labs, you know, so there are definitely flaws in all this research. And so you would think, if this is such a big deal, why is the government not getting involved in doing a really large study? And they actually are. And this is very exciting. It's called the National...
Oh, that's good news.
It is. It's called the National Children's Study. And the NIH is sponsoring this, the CDC. There are a few different organizations. And actually, Dr. Landrigan's group at Mount Sinai, they're one of the principal investigators. And they're going to be following 100,000 children from early in pregnancy till 21 years of age. And they're going to be looking at many different environmental exposures and the role that they play in causing disease and disability in childhood and throughout life, and how that translates into science. But the problem at this point is that it's a very new study. They're still knocking on the doors of pregnant women. So it's going to be a while until more concrete information comes out on a larger scale. And this is a study that will need to be refunded federally continually, you know, so we'll see what kind of funding remains available for that.
That's true in these shaky times. But what you talked about earlier is so important, like just making your own prudent, preventive choice, meanwhile, instead of waiting for the studies
to come out. Exactly, and that's the precautionary principle. Exactly, and there's so many easy things that we can do. You know, if you want to get a new carpet, not everybody can afford these wool the natural products are a fortune, but it's becoming so mainstream. If you go into the carpet store now, you'll see a lot of them say green carpets. But even, you know, trying not to use the glue, if you can put down the wood in the, you know, with the wood and the nail the way they tack it rather than the glue. But if you need to, seal off the room for 1 or 2 weeks, open up the windows and put on the fans. Or even if you're laying down an area rug, just open it up and leave it in your garage for a few weeks to off-gas. Because even when we don't smell it, there can still be off-gassing going on. So same with painting. You know, we now have all these VOC-free paints available, which are great. And they become so mainstream, they have them everywhere. And again, just seal off the room for a little while, turn on the fans, and let the room air out. You know, two of the best things that you can do for your home are to open up your windows 5 minutes a day and to take off your shoes when you walk in the door. You know, two of the best things.
I know many of my friends have sort of slippers that sit at the door, and just everyone who comes in has to take their shoes off. It really cuts down on your cleaning bill, too.
I remember when we were younger, there was a family down the block that made you do that, and we all thought, oh, my gosh, they're so strange. You know, now I have everybody take their shoes off. But, you know, there are really many, many things that we can do. You know, another big tip that people say is really big, the quality of the air in our homes are really important. You know, there's something called the Superfund site. If they're outside of our homes, if there's a toxic spill somewhere, the government will call it a Superfund site. And then they're mandated by a certain amount of time to clean that up right away. And there was an article in the New York Times back in 2001, and they said that some of our homes have carcinogens 50 to 70 times the level of the outdoor air. And in most homes, the government will classify some toxins in the air as a Superfund site. And one of the best things you can do for your air quality is just ditch the fragrances. all those air fresheners that you smell that you think, you know, take away the air, the scent, I mean, all it really does is put chemicals to mask the scent, and those are all artificial and chemicals that we're inhaling. So just ditching the air spray, you know, the aerosolized sprays, ditching those little sheets we put in our dryers to make our clothes smell so pretty, just getting rid of those things can significantly impact our air quality.
That is such a good tip. Yeah, just don't use that stuff. That's
right.
It. And
right.
If you do like something, you can always use a good quality aromatherapy oil.
And there are different scents, you know, that they do make different sprays with essential oils, and they do make natural ones that are on the market. Again, they're like three times the cost as a regular, you know, mainstream one. But you can use it less often, or as you said, you can make your own. You can light the candle. You know, many, many different things to do besides, you know, the plug-ins that distribute these chemicals all the time.
That's such great information, and I want to thank you so much for being our guest today right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And you gave out a lot of great websites, Dr. Fun. I want to just kind of give people those names one more time. You talked about Healthcare Without Harm.
Yeah, and particularly I also Practice Green Health is the organization that work with my hospital a lot. Both organizations are fabulous.
Now, in your hospital, are they making some of these changes?
Oh, yes.
I
was the co-chair for a few years. I stepped down when I started the Coalition for Environmental Health. The current co-chair is a very active, but, you know, I'm proud to say my hospital replaced the PVC and the IV tubing. We've replaced a lot of the cleaning supplies. We got a wonderful donation of bassinet mattresses, these all-natural bassinet mattresses that meet all standards, but they're free of the flame retardants, the traditional flame retardants, and the PVC. You know, they've made a lot of sustainability changes. They have many events in the hospital, book exchanges and gift exchanges, you know, all different sorts of things. I mean, it's really a very well-supported committee, and really administration has been on board. They've even spent more for some paper cups to replace some styrofoam, so I'm very proud of them.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being our guest today right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Thank you so much for having me, Ellen.
And thank you, listeners. And if you'd like to hear this show again or tell your friends or anyone you know to listen in, this show, as all of our shows and all of the Progressive Radio Network shows, will be archived at Progressive Radio Network under Archive, and then check The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we were listening today to Dr. Stacy Fund. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai at Facebook The Natural Nurse or naturalnurse.com, hoping that you stay healthy.